I've been practicing these five precepts, by the way, since young. Because I went to temple and I chanted the five precepts, and one day I thought, I've been saying all these five precepts every week, yet I've never really taken it seriously. I was like a hypocrite. So since then on, I decided to practice it. Not perfect, made mistakes along the way, but there is an intention to it. So with white lies, yes, I was with you. Like in the past, I was thinking, yeah, it doesn't harm. My intention was good. I was trying to help this person, or I was trying to cover some painful truth to this person. But why do we need to cover that? Because there is another way of doing it. So what I'm trying to say, sometimes we are stuck in this view or in this perception thinking that I have to answer the question yes or no. Like if somebody asks you, is my daughter well? You have to answer yes or no. But there could be another way of answering it that doesn't require you to tell a lie. But this answer is not telling a lie, yet it's not going to cause anything harmful to this person. Right? I'll give you a funny example. So if, let's say if you have a girlfriend, right? And your girlfriend was trying on these jeans, and then she had put on a little bit of weight, and then she asked you, do I look good in this pair of jeans? And you're like, okay, what can I say? I think your butt is too big in this butt. I can't say that. Otherwise, you're going to hit me. And then you're thinking, but you can say something else. You can say, well, it doesn't matter what you wear. I like you not because how you look. I like you because as who you are. It's not a lie. You like her because who she is, right?
Yeah.
But you don't need to say, yes, yes, darling, you look perfect in that pair of jeans. Perfect, perfect. It's a lie. But then you can say something truthful.
But indirectly.
Indirectly, yes. That doesn't necessarily answer the question. Make sense?
Makes sense.
Yeah. So you don't need to tell a lie. That's my point. You can tell a white lie, but you don't need to. You can be creative the way you answer it by trying your best to find an answer that might not hurt the other person, but is still the truth. Not easy, but maybe you can. Where are we? Oh, the last one, intoxicants. I already mentioned about it. So intoxicants, don't take it too lightly. Try your best to avoid all the intoxicants in your life. Sometimes people say social pressure, have to drink. I can tell you from experience, you don't need to have that social pressure. I work in Australia. Australian, as you know, has big drinking culture. My company have Friday drinks every Friday, but I never touch alcohol. And guess what? They never really look down on me not having any sick. They're fine with it. Nobody cares. To be honest with you, nobody really cares whether you drink or you don't drink. Right? As long as you treat them nicely, you respect them, then it's fine. If they don't like you because you don't drink, well, it tells more about them than yourself, right? It tells that it is a reflection of who they are rather than a reflection of who you are. So yeah, they are the five ones that you can do every day, every single minute, every single moment, not just through your action, but also through your mind. And the fundamental thing that behind this are all the intention. What are your intention in every single action that you do? From intention, you'll have your thought. Or from thought, then you might have intention. Through your intention, that's when you act upon it. So watch also your intention day to day. What sort of intention? When you want to say this, why you want to say that? If you can't catch it before, it's good. But if you can't, then at least have that reflective habit to think, what was my intention? Why did I say things like that? Was I angry? Did I want to harm the other person? And then you learn from it. So in Buddhism, the essence of Buddhism is to what? to what? Why you practice again? To be free from suffering. And how to be free from suffering? Yes, by practicing the Noble Eightfold Path. But what's the... Why you practice... Okay, sorry, I rephrase my question. If you're doing something, you probably want to achieve something, correct? What do you try to achieve by practicing the Noble Eightfold Path? Don't answer to be free from suffering, but what is the ultimate goal to it?
Happiness.
Peaceful.
Yeah, that is the side effect, but what is the ultimate goal to it? Huh?
Your brother?
What is it? Go back to the first part of the Noble Eightfold Path. What is it?
To get the right understanding.
Yes, wisdom. So essentially, all along, why you practice is to have this wisdom, to have this right understanding. That's why I say when you practice the Noble Eightfold Path, you can start from any way of this. But essentially, once you fulfill, complete all this path, you will start from beginning. Why? Because this is the forerunner of all things. Your wisdom. So your mind is the forerunner of all things. But because the wisdom lies in the mind, therefore, that's the ultimate goal of the practice. And one way of having this wisdom, not one way, the way to go to have this wisdom is by practicing all these eight factors. But daily life, practice the five minimum, if you can. If you can't meditate and whatnot, it's okay. At least practice the five precepts. That's the bare minimum as a Buddhist we should aim to, the five precepts. And then when you wanna deepen your practice, that's when you can look into the other factors in the Eightfold Path. What can you deepen yourself in? So right understanding, right intention, you can do it by listening to Dharma talks so you understand the Buddha's teachings better, so you know what's right, what's wrong, what's wise, what's skillful, what's not skillful. And then you can also have more self-reflection in yourself, because essentially it's all about our own experience. The wisdom has to be experiential, meaning that it's not just coming from the books, but rather something that you actually understand completely within yourself. Like you get that when you do assignment and you're stuck with an answer, and you got that aha moment, you found the answer. That kind of thing, the same feeling when you have the wisdom, you're like, oh, ha, I understand it, because you see it yourself. That kind of wisdom it is.
But about the five precepts, like for the fifth one, can we overlook it like to make our body healthier? Because some like believe that drinking alcohol makes our body healthier.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Who said that?
No, there's like kind of like alcohol, I don't know what's that name, and my mother told me to drink it because like it boosts your blood circulation, something like that.
Is it the only way to boost your circulation?
No.
What other ways can you do to boost your circulation?
Doing sport.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not the only way. And I sometimes when you read studies, be careful too. Because some studies are biased. They are funded by particular parties that have their own agenda. What I'm trying to say, sometimes a lot of times you have conflicting results from studies. One of the reasons is because the sponsor of some studies are from companies. And there is a hidden agenda from these companies to influence the result. You know, right? So with that kind of studies, researchers, you just have to be careful with the methodology of the study, find out who the sponsors are, find out who conducts the studies, and find out the statistics or the results of the studies. So don't be so gullible. There's so much information these days on Google and on social media. If you believe all of them, You don't. You're wasting your university degree. You pay so much money to come to university to question all this, to have that kind of thinking, scientific thinking, to know, to see what is reliable source, what is unreliable source, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. So use your intelligence. Don't just believe in what you see, believe in what you read, because there could be some modified or fake news or I don't know what you call it these days. All those weird stuff. You know, don't be gullible. That's what I'm trying to say.
And one more question. Yes. How about during operation? Like we need to use drug to ease up our mind, right?
Of course, during those times. It's okay lah.
Okay.
Unless you decide not to, okay, then it's your choice. No, it's fine. During those times, it's fine. Because you're not conscious anyway. So unless you're conscious, then it's a different story, but it's fine. Some teacher, Jim, you know Jim, right? Jim Teo. He had a major surgery a few years ago, and after surgery, he decided not to have painkillers. So some strong practitioners can do that. They can just watch the pain, not react to the pain, and let it be. And he was fine, he was peaceful throughout. I don't know whether 24/7, but I assume that he was peaceful throughout because the way when he explained it, when he told us the story, he doesn't seem like he was in pain or suffering. So you can choose to do that. If you're ready and you want to challenge yourself, go for it. But don't also, so basically have a self-awareness to know where you're at. If you're good like Mr. Teo without painkiller after surgery, then it's okay. But if you can't handle it, it's okay to have painkiller as well. So yeah, just be aware of yourself. Don't be so gung-ho, huh?
Yeah.
Too gung-ho until to the point it doesn't help yourself is also not so wise. Where were we? 5%.
We finished 5%. Yeah.
Finish, Leo. Okay, done. Okay, so I said, the whole idea of practice is to have this level of wisdom. And when you have full complete wisdom, that's when you become an arahant, right? But before you, there are a few stages of enlightenment, which we are not going through that today. But an arahant or fully enlightened one is somebody with a complete wisdom. Why do they have, what sort of wisdom are we talking about here?
Is it like complete understanding that things are as it is?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Correct. You see the three marks of existence. You understand them fully, completely. Or another way of the suttas or the scripture says that if you can see, penetrate the Four Noble Truth. That's another way of the sutta says that somebody has attained enlightenment. You penetrate the Four Noble Truth, meaning that you understand fully what these Four Noble Truths are. So the contemplation can be all of these four truths. Why you understand fully what dukkha is, you understand fully the cause of dukkha, you know the end of dukkha, and you know the path. You have seen all these four, then you have full, complete liberation. Because without seeing all these four, or fully, understand it fully, comprehensively, then you haven't gained the full wisdom yet. Which is okay. Most of us are not, anyway. Another one, okay, so that's five precepts, which is the aspects of morality in the Eightfold Path. And we have two other aspects, don't we? We already touched on wisdom a little bit, and now meditation. Who practices meditation regularly?
Every week.
Every week? That's good.
Only for this time.
Anyone less than a week? Yeah, less than a week? Less than a week?
Yes.
How often do you practice?
I try to do it every day.
Oh, every day? That's good. So why are you not being able to practice it more often than you wish, or maybe you don't wish to practice more often, but anyway, why don't you practice it more often, if not daily? What is it? Have you asked yourself why don't I meditate today? Or do you see a value? Do you see value in practicing meditation? Because sometimes we don't do something because we don't see the value of doing it. Right? It's like opportunity cost. You wouldn't do something if you know that this thing that I'm gonna do gonna give me something or gonna give me a return. Like the return can be pleasure, can be happiness, can be satisfaction, can be pride, can be anything, right? So if you don't see value, you probably are not motivated doing it. So do you see any value? Who sees value in practicing meditation? Ah, wow. Actually, most of you, but yet you're not practicing. Why not? What's the biggest hindrance?
Busy.
Okay, busy.
Laziness.
Anything else? Sleeping, feeling tired. Yeah? Or is it because when you meditate, you feel like there is no benefit? What I'm saying is you don't feel the benefit, not to say that you don't think that there is a benefit, but you don't feel the benefit or you don't see there is a benefit in yourself when you practice meditation. Who feel like that? That's okay. I'm trying to think something. Give me a second. No, I'm trying to think how I was before I practiced meditation. From experience, from personal experience, one of the challenges or one of the reasons why I didn't practice meditation as often as I wanted to is because, like I said, like I didn't see myself progressing in it. I didn't feel the fire or the fuel that makes me want to do it. In a way that I felt like probably I'm not going anywhere. I didn't feel good neither. I sometimes get even more stressed because the chattering of the mind is so noisy. So after meditation, I probably get more lethargic or more stressed out of it, right? But then there was a point in my life that when I got it, I felt the value to meditation. And that value alone is enough to propel me to practice further. So to me, that in personal experience, I'm not saying that everybody will experience this or everybody has to experience this, is that when I felt a lot of sense of peace, a lot of sense of fullness, a lot of sense of contentment, happiness, joy from meditation, that is when I knew I want to go deeper in this. I want to practice even further. I want to understand about this more because I felt the benefit. I knew all the theories. I knew about the theories about meditation. I knew that meditation was important. I knew that meditation would help me to understand myself better. But until to a point that I felt that sense of peace, the fire was very weak. And then I asked myself, why did I feel that? Yes, I was lucky that I encountered good teachers, that I listened to talks, and by practicing daily life, applying Buddhism in daily life, I already did the process. So the process has started before even I meditated. So what sort of process that I was saying, or what I was referring to, what process was it? So that process, what I meant was in the daily life, is process of letting go. So I wasn't meditating, but yet when I was awake, when I was in daily life, I was sort of doing meditation. So how did I do it? One, by being aware, being mindful about what I was thinking. Two, letting go. I did a lot of letting go. So sometimes I feel irritated. I noted my irritation. I let it go. I find whatever creative way that makes me let go. Could take a while, could take quicker, doesn't matter. But all I tried was let go. So that helps. So when you do that consistently throughout daily life, when you meditate, you can actually feel the difference. So a lot of times we meditate and we feel like so bland, you know, didn't feel anything, didn't feel peace, didn't feel anything. The missing piece, it could be your daily life. It could be throughout your waking moment, you're forgetting about being aware, you're forgetting about being mindful, you're forgetting about your action, your intention, everything. And then you're feeling, when you're feeling angry, how do you react when you feel angry? When you feel sad, how do you react? When you feel lonely, how do you react? So that waking moment is important, because you're awake most of the time than you sit for meditation. If you do daily practice, let's say you practice for maximum 1 hour or half an hour, the rest, your eyes wide open. Yeah? So during this eyes wide open is actually more important than that half an hour, 1 hour sitting that you're doing in a day, if you do it daily. So that's the opportunity for you all. Because these moments can be your meditative moment as well. Be aware, be mindful, remember all these five precepts. Try your best to remember them. When I say remember, not just remember here, but remember practicing them, applying them in your daily life. It's part of mindfulness practice. Yes?
Yeah. I actually have a question.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure if I'm actually meditating the right way, but I actually use it when like I feel extremely stressed out, or I feel extremely angry or sad. So what I do is that I kind of detach myself from like everything. I just stay silent and remain calm, and I just stay like peaceful for like a minute or so. And then it's just like a refresh, and then I feel so much better from it. But
how do you do it when you wanna make yourself calm?
I just, whenever I feel extremely sad, I just stay calm, and I think of like, you know, Buddhism, and I can teach you how to like detach yourself from all these things. Yeah, so I just remain peace. And
how do you feel?
Just not
after
think
that?
About anything. Yeah, I feel extremely good because, you know. Yeah, because not dealing with the stress for like a minute, it actually feels really good, and it helps me to like refresh like my brain and everything.
When you say you detach yourself, how do you do that?
How do I do that?
Yes. Yeah. When you say when
eyes.
You detach.
I know, I just close my eyes.
Yeah.
Breathe out.
Yeah.
And not think about it.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's good. I think the key is that you're feeling peaceful, you're feeling more calm.
Yeah.
And that means that your mind settled, which is good.
But I don't practice meditation like, oh, it's 8 o'clock, I do meditation, like I don't do that.
You mean formal meditation sitting, yes. Oh, it's fine. That's why, like I said, sometimes when you do, let's say you do a daily practice meditation, let's say you do it 1 hour a day, but then 8 hours sleep, so you have spent 9 hours. So how many hours left? Do your maths.
15.
Yes, 15 hours left. Which one's the longest?
15.
15, right? So these are actually more important, or equally important, I would say. It's equally important because you spend 15 hours wide awake. That's why I was giving you a tip. Like practicing all these five precepts is actually practicing of your mindfulness as well. Because if you're not mindful of what you're doing, you're not mindful of your intention, how do you know that you haven't broken these five precepts? Right? So all of this requires the level of mindfulness from you. But then, what you probably notice, the more you practice, that your sharpness or your awareness is not sharp enough to be able to pick up every single detail. That's why formal meditation sitting is important, because it's like charging battery. You got mobile phone these days, right? You use it up for the waking hours, and then what you do at night?
Charge.
You charge it so that you can use it again tomorrow morning, the next day, the whole day, and then you charge it again. That's what we do meditation, formal meditation is for. You charge so that you get the same power or the same, even more power in the mind, in your mindfulness, so that you can actually be a better person. You can actually avoid harm, avoid doing harm to other people. Because when you, especially when you are stressed, when you overwork, your body is tired. It's harder. When you're tired, it's really harder to stay mindful. You do your formal sitting, it's like recharging this energy, and then your energy can go up a little bit, and then you can be better. And then if you do it really well, some people do, you actually don't need as much sleep as you do. Some people can sustain for 4 hours a day because they meditate. Not many people can do that, but some people can. Because it's actually energizing. If you do it correctly, it can be so energizing that you actually don't feel tired at all. That you felt tired before you meditated, you meditate, and after that, poof, energy just overflowed, and you're like, you can run a mile. Maybe you can run a marathon, metaphorically. Please don't do it. So that is the mental energy, it's not the physical energy. Of course, we all do need sleep. Otherwise, they won't sleep. The monks won't sleep at all. They do sleep, but they don't need as much sleep as we do. One, because they don't waste a lot of mental energy throughout the day. Two, they recharge a lot their mental energy through meditation. So meditation is very important and very valuable. And it's actually very beneficial. You know, in psychology these days, if you go to therapies, they can actually teach you mindfulness meditation. And how much do they charge you? An hour? And if you come to EDT or meditation workshop, how much do they charge you? Nothing! You get most of your money out of here than these teachings than going to those meditation classes. So you're actually in a gold mine already. Yeah, you don't see the gold, you don't see the value. Either you're blind or you're just not aware that it is valuable, right? You're not blind, I'm just teasing. But what I'm trying to say, it is precious. Buddhist teachings is very precious, because you know when you buy precious metals or precious items, somebody can steal it, right?
Yeah.
So it's not secure, right?
Yeah.
But with Buddhist teaching, I can guarantee you, nobody can steal it from you. Because it's intangible. It's not something like material that is so tangible, people can steal it or people can crack it and break it. But because this is something to do with your mental work, it's intangible, nobody can steal it from you. So whatever you gain is for your own benefit. So the more you progress in the practice, it's for nobody else but yourself. You're the one who will benefit it the most. The people around you will benefit it for sure, because you treat them nicely, more kindly, more compassionately. They become happier because of you. But then the most happier person is actually you. Why? Why is it? Don't just believe in what I say. Come on. Like I said, don't be so gullible. Why? Why the more you practice actually makes you happier?
Isn't it because as you understand more of the Buddhist teaching, then you understand that
things, attachment causes suffering.
And then, like, so you become, you have less attachment?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, that can be true too. But the more practical aspect to it is that a kind mind or a pure mind, the cause of joy and happiness is nothing but pure mind. So the purity of the mind that makes you feel happy and joyful. Of course, the purity of the mind comes from having less attachment, having less defilements and all those sort of things. But this joy comes from a pure mind. Naturally, if you practice five precepts, or practice being a good person, you're a happy person. Have you met people, they're not Buddhist, they can be any religion, but they're very happy, yet they're very kind. Have you met those people? They're very kind people, they're very generous, yet they're very happy. Have you met? No?
No.
No? You haven't met? Oh my God. I actually have a lot of friends like that. They're not necessarily Buddhist, but they are very kind, they're very generous, but they're happy. Haven't met. So you only meet happy Buddhists? Yeah? Not really. Ayo. Where have you been? Come to universe more often. Well, pay more attention to these people around you to see some people who are happy and who are not happy, and see what sort of characters they carry with them. Because a lot of times, people who are unhappy, grumpy, they're very tight people. They're very, all about self. A lot of ego. They tend to be tight, they tend to be angry, they tend to be anxious and all those other things. But people who are having less ego, very kind, very generous, they usually are more happy. They're not necessarily peaceful, but they're happy. So that's why I say, by practicing being good, at least if you're not gaining the wisdom or anything, at least you will be a happy person. You live this life happily. And then the wisdom will give you the peace. The peace comes from understanding, letting go. When you let go, it's peaceful. There's a saying from Ajahn Chah. You know Ajahn Chah? Ajahn Chah, he's a famous teacher or monk from Thailand. He's passed away. He's famous around 1890s, before I was born. His disciples. He has a lot of Western disciples. So a lot of the Buddhist Thai forest tradition that you see in the West coming from a lot from his tradition. So he's done a lot to Buddhism. So Ajahn Chah said, one of his famous sayings is that if you let go a little, you're peaceful a little. But if you let go a lot, you're happy or peaceful a lot. So the more you let go, the more peaceful you become. Naturally, when you're peaceful, you're happy. But then the happiness coming from goodness, coming from being a good person, will help you achieve peace. That's why all these eight factors come together. You practice right action, right livelihood, right speech. Well, without mindfulness, you can't practice that. So you need the mindfulness. And then with all this, it helps you with your meditation practice. And your meditation will help you with your wisdom. So everything is interconnected. Now, I haven't mentioned one of them, which is right effort. Who knows what right effort is? I give you a clue, there are four of them. Buddhism like numbers. Oh, well, I like numbers too, huh? So what are these right efforts? Hiya. Hiya. what? No? Quiet? Okay. I give you a clue again.
Okay.
Two aspects. Wholesomeness and unwholesomeness. Oh. No better? What is wholesomeness? What is unwholesomeness? What is wholesome? Who knows what wholesome is? What is wholesome? When somebody says it's wholesome, what does it mean?
Wholesome.
Good things.
Good.
Good.
Yeah. Skillful. Wholesome. This is unwholesome, opposite. So not good or
boring.
Unskillful. Right? What is that?
Boring.
So, four of them. Very easy. Very, very easy. And you can apply this in your daily life too. Very, very important. What did I say about five precepts? What's driving behind it? Your intention. So where does the intention lies?
Your mind.
In your mind. Okay. Not in your head. So these five precepts, of course, will require some level of mental state or like mind or mindfulness aspect. But then you can also use these four efforts as part of your mind training. That's why it's categorized under meditation. There's a reason why it's categorized under meditation. And this is not applied just during your meditation, formal meditation, but it can be applied in every single moment. Very easy. Two aspect, wholesomeness, unwholesomeness. So the first one, it says, if you have a wholesome state of mind, try to sustain it. Meaning that if you already have a wholesome state of mind, meaning you have kindness, you have compassion, you have loving kindness, what else? Generosity and all those sort of things. Try to sustain it. Second, if you haven't had it, bring it up. So if you don't feel generous, try to feel more generous. If you don't feel kindness towards somebody, try to generate the feeling of kindness. That's the second. So the first two is all about wholesomeness. The last two is about unwholesomeness. Similar concept. So what it says, if you have had unwholesomeness state of mind, meaning that you're angry, you're upset, you want to punch somebody, you're like feeling irritated, try your best to overcome it. Let it go. Find a way to let it go. And then the fourth, if you haven't had it, stay away from it. Protect yourself from it. Don't try to even bring it up. Can do? Easy? Can? Can? No? Not easy? Really? Why?
Try.
Of course, we all try our best. Yeah, we always practice. That's why we call it practice. We are trying our best to do all this as much as we can. And if we can't, then we can't. But we practice and we try. So if let's say we are having grudges against somebody, then we try our best to overcome the grudge. Why? Because nobody else is being harmed but yourself. All this is about self-compassion as well. Because if you have an unwholesome state of mind, it's actually nobody else but yourself is being harmed. You're feeling angry. You think, let's say I'm angry at you. You think you're affected by my anger? Except, unless if I yell at you or anything like that. But if I just feel it, you feel like you're being harmed? No, right? But I already feel it. And that feeling is actually unpleasant. And it's not conducive for peace of mind. So I'm already being harmed. And then if I act upon it, I harm him and I harm myself. So that's why this practice, nobody else will benefit but yourself. So the more you practice, the easier it becomes. Sometimes, by the fact of being mindful of it, it will just disappear. It can be to that powerful. Just being mindful, because it's like our mind is like a computer in a way too. Like if you set a program, you write a script, you say, you write this algorithm to say, if I feel angry, let it go. If I have grudges against one, let it go. So there is a program already. So if you have planted that intention in the mind, and you keep doing it, your processor will become better and better. So the time that you need, probably at the beginning, maybe one day, and then the more you do it, maybe it become like 10 hours, and then become 5 hours, and then become like maybe less than a minute. So it comes with practice. The more you do it, the easier it becomes. Of course, there will be things that will be harder, there will be things that will be easier. Because the more you have self-identification to it, the closest it is to your heart, the harder it is to let go. So the harder it is from you, it's easier. But the closest it is, it's harder. That's why people that are close to you push your button easier. People that you care the most sometimes makes you angry the most. Simple, because your self-identification to these people is actually more than your self-identification with other people. That's why some aspects in your life will be easier to let go, some aspects in your life will be harder to let go, which is fine, because that's how we are conditioned, and that's how we are. That is fine, we work with what we have. We work with what we've got. Don't aim for ideal, because it's not going to be helpful. Start from where you are. If you're from here, start from here. If you're there, you start from there. If you're here, you start from here. And then slowly, 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 you go up. And when you go up, it's easier. What bothers you in the past, it won't bother you anymore. Right? And then the more you have all these, the less things can push your button, the happier you are. So all along is all for your benefit. The Buddha wouldn't be benefiting from it. Yes, we feel grateful for his teaching, but the benefit is actually yourself. So practice 5 precepts, 4 efforts, and then if you can, come to the talk, listen to the talk, refresh your understanding, ask questions, because sometimes we are also confused with the teachings, and we can ask the teachers, because teachers have practiced more, have understanding more, better understanding than us. Then we ask questions, and then if you can, go to retreats, practice meditation, deepen your understanding about meditation, and if you can, also, do your own self-practice at home. And then slowly, you'll be free. Freedom! So yeah, I think that's the gist of what I want to say. Any questions?
I have a question. Going back to your point, where you said, if you had an wholesome state of mind, then you try your best to overcome and let it go. So, digesting a bit. So I like this one friend who I don't really enjoy hanging out with, because like for me, like this person, she keeps complaining about like, the little stuff, like
she was listening.
So yeah, like this person, she keeps complaining about like that. Like unimportant stuff. So like she keeps complaining about stuff. Like whenever like we go out, she keeps like complaining, and like just get annoyed somewhat. Mm-hmm. The point where I just got like, I feel like if I don't hang out with this person, it'll be better. Cause like I feel like if I hang out with this person, I get like angry. I get very annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
But so I was like, my effort to let it go was to not see this person.
Do you ask this question because you want to be with her more often than what you want?
Not really, because like, I just feel bad for abandoning her so much.
Alright, I don't know. I know one tips or a few tips that we can apply to help you with this. If you still want to be close to this person, if you want to help this person, you probably can't help her because it's a habit probably. Mm-hmm. She's conditioned to talk like that, she's conditioned to behave like that. But personally, when I encounter people like that, what I do is change my attitude. Because a lot of times, it's our attitude that makes us react to what we do. So my attitude is, when she's doing that, I give her the space for her to express herself. She probably doesn't need your advice. She probably just wants to blah, 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 right? That makes her satisfied. Like somehow, for that whatever reason, that's what she is happy with. She probably doesn't need you to listen to her. But what you can give, at least, give her the space to let her express what she needs, right? Give her that space. Give her that time. Give her that means for her to express that. You don't need to listen in a way that you, if you can, you listen, but most likely this person doesn't really want you to listen anyway. They probably just want to have that opportunity to and then complain because it makes them feel better. So maybe that's one thing you can do. Or second, yeah, probably hang out with other friends. You don't avoid, but if you see her, you see her. But if you don't see her, you don't see her.
Yes.
You don't feel obliged that you have to hang out with her. But if you happen to hang out with her, then let her be herself. Right? Let her be herself. Let her express what she needs to. And you don't have to judge her for that. Because we all have our own flaws anyway. We are not perfect ourselves. So let her be herself. She probably is not aware that she is making you unhappy, but if you have a chance to tell her one day, maybe you can, but if you can't, then it's okay. The harmony, I think, is more important than her knowing that how she makes you feel, I guess. Any other question? Did you ask a question?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how to say this, but like, I have a good friend of mine who recently was going through a breakup, and so I've been always giving her advices, like every time I see her, like she'll talk about like her relationship problems, and then I'll give her advices. But it came to a point where like she, whenever she sees me, she would only talk about her relationship problems, and you know, like I'm a student as well, like I'm stressed out as well, like you know, I want to talk to her about it as well, but like she only draw me with like relationship problems. So like I really want to help her, like, but I don't know how am I going to sustain that.
Do you feel like the relationship has become one-sided in a way?
Yes.
That you don't feel like she wants to know about yourself?
Yeah.
Then have you ever tried to say, change the topic?
Yeah, I actually changed the topic before, but then she would go back to her topic.
Mm.
Yeah.
And when she told you about her story, how did she tell you about the story? Like,
well, she's
with emotions?
Emotions, yeah.
So basically she's still
sad. Yeah.
How long ago when she broke up?
No, she haven't.
Oh, sorry, it's not that they broke up.
It's like she wants to break up, but she, you know, like she instead of, I don't know how to say that in English,
don't know how to approach the situation.
Yeah, she doesn't know how to approach the situation as well as, you know, she misses him as well, but she wants to break up.
Huh?
So
she's confused.
She's confused. So
right.
I have to give her a lot of advices for a long period of time.
Right. And it's kind of draining to you.
Yes, it's draining.
Right. So maybe try to communicate to her to say that, look, I really care about you. Mm. I really want you to be happy, especially with your relationship with your partner, but sometimes I have too much to do. Do you mind if I talk about it some other time, or maybe just say that sometimes I miss the old time of us where we just talk about other things about relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Try to hint to her to say that
it's too much for me.
yeah, or something like that.
Yeah.
But don't say it in a way that it's a bit insensitive, because she's probably need your help as well. That's
mm-hmm.
why she comes to you and talk to you. But of course, you also need to look after yourself, not to be overwhelmed with it. So if you're overwhelmed, it's good to communicate to her to say that, look, this is how I feel about it. I hope you can understand. I care about you, don't get me wrong, but I'm also quite overwhelmed at the moment. Or maybe you can suggest another time. Just say, oh, sorry, I'm actually quite busy today, but I'm happy to talk about it.
Maybe if she calls and she cries and I kind of have to leave everything and
okay.
Don't hang out with her. Let her go.
Let her go.
I was doing some exercise, for something back thing. You keep thinking it's not quite good.
Or bring her out, take her out, go out, watch a movie together or something. Take her off mind of that topic for a while. Go for a walk in the park. I don't know. It's hard.
And
sometimes we can't help other people. Only themselves can help their own problem.
Yeah, that's true.
You can support them, you can give them advice. In the end of the day, it's up to them to take the advice, whether they want to listen to you or not. It's up to them.
Mm-hmm.
So all you can do is to give her support. But of course, you need to look after yourself also along the way, because if you are being overwhelmed, then it's also not being sustainable and helpful for yourself.
Or teach her Buddhism. Free from suffering.
I was going to ask her to come today.
It's okay. Plenty of talks on YouTube. You can share her some links if you find something useful. Yeah, relationship is a big thing, especially young people. Sound like very old. But yeah, it's giving a lot of pain and suffering. You know why? I don't know.
We're immature.
This is my theory. So don't quote me on this. Because we are so conditioned. We are so conditioned, especially by what we watch on TV, on movies. And the idea of what relationship should be has been so colored by all this conditioning. What a boyfriend should be like, what a girlfriend should be like, and if they don't behave like this, then you're not a good boyfriend, you're not a good girlfriend. But you miss the point. So if you know how to relate to yourself, you actually know how to relate to anyone else. They can be your parents. They can be your siblings, they can be your friends, they can be your partner. If you know how to relate to yourself, that's the important thing. If you know how to relate in a peaceful way to yourself, you know how to relate to others well. You know how to create harmony. You know how to live in harmony with people, live happily with people. Of course, there are some behaviors of others that might cause the pain, but you can't control what other people do. You can't control what people say and how people's gonna react or treat you. But all along, you can always control how you say, what you say, what you do, how you treat others. And then the key is sometimes how people respond to you is not. Sorry, let me rewind. Why you're feeling happy or unhappy is not because what other people do to you or what other people say to you. It's all come down to your own reaction to what people do to you or what people say to you. The key doesn't lie outside. the key is actually in here. So whether you wanna be happy or you wanna be sad, it's not because of these people. It's because of this. If you understand that, it actually doesn't matter what people treat you, what people say to you, how people treat you, it's their problem. Because you know the key is actually here. That's the ultimate, obviously, because if we haven't completely let go, we haven't fully penetrated all this truth and wisdom, you probably still have that kind of friction a little bit. But like I say, the more you practice, the more you see it. And the more you see it, the easier it is. And the less this can affect you. Your mind will become like Teflon. You know Teflon? You know when you cook? It doesn't stick, does it? Unless it's a broken Teflon, then you need to buy a new one. But if it's a good Teflon, it doesn't stick. So your mind becomes Teflon. Like, whatever it is, it doesn't stay. It comes, it goes. It comes, it goes. So whenever it doesn't stay, it's clean. It's always clean. Nothing stays. So when it's clean, it's bright. When it's bright, happy and peaceful. Do you want that? You want that? No? If you don't want it, then it's your problem. It's not my problem. So yeah, try your best to practice. And hopefully, by you feeling better, feeling happier, you can also influence other. And other people will feel happier, feel more peaceful, like to be around you, and can you yourself can become example to other people. And that will be good. Because it's like a ripple effect. If one person is good, it has another circle of goodness, and another circle of goodness, and hopefully many, many more people will become happier and better and more peaceful. Can do? Can. What can? What can you do? Sorry, I'm teaching. Like, I'm teaching young kids. What are your homework? What's your homework? What is this?
Five research.
So what is this?
Four noble truths.
Yes, another four?
Effort.
Four efforts. What are the four efforts?
Wholesomeness
and unwholesomeness. And then what else can you practice in your daily life?
Eight.
Yeah. Try this first. Five research and four efforts. And then when you have time, learn more in depth about meditation. And when you do that more often, maybe one day, you're probably teaching many people. So you'll probably become enlightened yourself. And you become like a Zen master or something. Yeah. Okay? Easy? Easy? Yes, Peter? Easy?
Okay.
sorry. Huh? Peter, right? Yeah. Ken, can do? Any other question? Last one?
I'm very curious about something.
Yes,
so you're in the jungle.
Oh, okay. I'm in the class, but anyway, yes, I'm in the jungle.
You're with a tiger.
Uh-huh.
You have a sword. If it was about to eat you, what would you do?
What would I do?
Would you kill? Or would you let it eat you?
How do you know that it's going to eat me?
It's coming!
Well, it's coming. Can
I hide? I can hide. Hear their stomach growling.
Can I hide? Can I hide?
No, but can I hide? He's right in front of you. What would you do? Well, I'm very hungry.
Actually, this sort of scenario, if you ask me now, I might do something else when it happens to me in real life. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like sometimes you don't know what you're going to do until you're in that situation. I can tell you what I think I'm going to do, but if I'm in that situation, I actually probably do something else. So ideally, I'll run away. I'll hide somewhere. But I can run faster than you.
It's a jaguar.
It's a jaguar. I don't know.
Don't go to jungle.
I don't know. I probably try to protect myself as much as I can.
Like what? With a sword?
Yeah, maybe I'll probably
kill.
No, not kill, but maybe harm his leg or something so that he can't run away or something. Not harming him to a point that he's gonna die, but not gonna be able to be powerful enough to harm me, and then hopefully not to kill him in the end. And hopefully I have something that I can actually press the wound or something that can heal the wound one day, but at least it doesn't have the full power to attack him. Like I say, I can say that now, but if it happens to me, I probably wouldn't have anything. I don't know what's going to happen. But ideally, I will do something that will protect myself, but at the same time, I'm not gonna harm as much as I can.
Harm a little bit is fine.
Harm a little bit, but not to harm a little bit to a point that it won't harm me, if that makes sense. But I try my best not to kill it. I don't know. I hope I won't. I really do. I don't want to be in that situation. But yeah, in the end of the day, I guess you do. Instinctively, you want to protect yourself. No? Sorry, I don't know the answer. What would you do?
Slay.
Oh, really?
I don't think so. Because if I die, I go to heaven.
Maybe that's not a bad idea.
Maybe. I don't kill.
If you can, there's this interesting story. Okay, I give you this story to add. So this story I heard from Ajahn Brahm. Have you heard of Ajahn Brahm? He's a monk. He lives in Perth, WA, and he is the disciple of Ajahn Chah. Remember Ajahn Chah that I mentioned earlier, the Thai monk. So Ajahn Brahm, he's a British. So he's born. He's from UK. But he now lives in WA, in Perth. So he's been a monk for about maybe 35 or between 35 and 40 years. He's quite senior, so he became a monk quite young, not long after he finished his university degree. So he's very smart. He completed his degree from Cambridge University on scholarship on theoretical physics. So he's a very smart guy. So I give you enough background, I think. And he's very funny. So he has thousands of followers, if not millions probably. So he's quite famous. On YouTube channel, you can find Ajahn Brahm easily, like plenty of his videos on YouTube. That's enough of him. So this is the story. So there is this situation where there are, let's say, five monks practicing together in a forest. Forest again. I just make up a scene here. But the main of the story is important. The background story is not very important, but the scene, the meaning of it is important. So let's say five monks. So one is the more senior one, very, very wise, very, very kind, the abbot. One is a very lousy monk, hopeless, really, really hopeless. Like you ask this monk to do anything, nothing works, really hopeless monk. One is this monk's brother. So they're very close, they're siblings. Another one, this person doesn't like this monk. So they don't get along really well. And where's the other one? The other one, let's say, neutral person. Doesn't have strong connection, nor not positive, not negative, neutral person. And one day, while they're practicing, there's this robber or a thug or bad person stumble upon this monk and want to rob their possession. And then they have weapons with them. They have knives and all those sort of things. And then But and then when they had the encounter, and then this thief was saying that, I will let you go, but with what condition? If you let me kill one of you. Oh, sorry, the fifth one is the very old man. Very old. It's going to die soon. Very old. So remember, huh? One is very old. One doesn't get along with him. One is a brother, his brother. One, what is the other one?
Very lousy.
No, this is lousy. Very lousy.
Very lousy.
Very lazy, very lousy.
Yeah.
So who will he choose? He has to choose one. Who will he choose out of these five?
You mean the robber? Who will he
choose? No, no, no. Like this thief was saying, I will let you guys go, but I have to kill one of you. Who do you think? Who thinks he's gonna choose himself?
Wise man.
The wise man will think that I'm gonna sacrifice myself. I'm gonna choose myself to be sacrificed and kill me.
I take my number.
No? You said that? One person? Who thinks of the lousy man? The hopeless man? No?
You might say he's hopeless or just kill him.
Just lazy, hopeless. Yeah. Lousy, everything, like whatever you do, whatever you ask him to do, he'd never been successful. You know, like
my position.
So who's gonna choose him? One. Okay, who's gonna choose the old man who's going to die anyway? Three. Oh, interesting. And what's the remaining one? Brother. Who's gonna choose the brother? No?
You choose
the You wanna know the answer? Have I spoken everyone yet? Who did I miss?
No.
Oh, who gonna choose his enemy? Oh no. Wow. Wow, saint. Everyone of you saint. So do you know what the answer?
Everybody got killed.
No! This is like happy ending.
Okay. Oh, they killed the robber.
Didn't like the wise man actually negotiate with the thief?
Doesn't have a choice. He has to choose. It's a thief with a knife. Sorry, but it's a thief with a knife.
What if the five cooperate together and kill the thief?
Nobody.
Happy ending.
No, not yet. Haven't finished the story. So the wise monk said to this thief, said, sorry, I can't choose anyone. My love to myself and to all these monks are the same. I can't choose anyone. So his metta, his loving kindness, it encompasses everybody, all beings. Without who, well, no matter who they are, including himself. That's why he can't choose. And it's a happy ending. So the thief's like, oh, you're so calm. I let you go. So the moral of the story is sometimes we think that, you know, the quality of loving kindness is about sacrificing oneself for others. But loving kindness actually includes oneself. So if you neglect this, you actually haven't practiced well enough. Because all comes from here. You can't give something that you don't have. So you have to have it within yourself, and then you can give it to others. So that's the moral of the story. Of course, when you really genuinely sacrifice, it's a praiseworthy act. But, you know, in essence, metta or loving kindness includes yourself. So you have to look after yourself too. Okay? Okay? Good. Remember your homework. No, just remember them. Remember doing them. Okay? All right. Thank you, everybody.